Welcome to the show, and don't forget to check out this month's Nebula exclusive, Giant Space Monsters, as we explore everything from Space Kraken to giant sandworms. To get access and help support the show while hearing every episode early and ad-free, plus hours of bonus content, check out go.nebula.tv/IsaacArthur and use my code IsaacArthur.
As ever more automation works its way into our legal system and courts, we must ask what challenges and advantages AI has in justice, and if AI will come to be our judge and jury. Welcome back to Science and Futurism with IsaacArthur from the Sci-Fi Sunday here on SFIA, where we take topics common in science fiction and try to look at them through the lens of science. Our topic today is automated justice, because who wouldn't want their fate decided by the digital offspring of calculators and spam filters? We'll look at using computers and AI to help in legal decisions, or even as judges themselves, and what the misconceptions about them are in science fiction, and what some of the pros and cons are in this approach, which has many advantages and challenges, along with ethical conundrums. It's not really a debate that we can make a computer able to act as a judge or jury. After all, we trust them with our playlists, our love lives on dating apps, so why not our legal disputes? Rather, it's a matter of how much input humans should have into that process. To do this, we need to first look at two key issues. First, what is a justice system? And second, how much input should humans have into it? Needless to say, before we can tackle the question of the role that AI can play in the justice system, we need to understand a little bit about the justice system and its current challenges. The justice systems we have are all layered. I'll talk about the US system, but a layered court structure is almost universally adopted worldwide. At the top end, we have the US Supreme Court, whose members are like the Avengers of legal decision-making, minus the cool outfits and superpowers, of course. The court rules on precedent, policy, and legality, and all the final say after other lower layers have acted. In many ways, it is the weakest of the three branches of US government, but it is arguably more powerful than the other arms of the government, Congress and the executive branch, because it can overrule both of them. The judges on this court are also not democratically elected by the voters, other than indirectly, and appointments are for life. The importance of this will become relevant later. Lawyers do appearances in this court on behalf of their clients. As we go down layers, the method of appointment or election varies by state. And for instance, in my home state of Ohio, we have a Supreme Court whose members are all elected to 6-year terms and cannot run for office after age 70. At the opposite end of the spectrum, we have small claims courts for civil disputes between people, such as damage to a vehicle or compensation for someone stealing their cat. These are for small matters up to a certain ceiling, such as $25,000. The people typically appear themselves, and the evidence provided is informal. There are also criminal courts at the lower end of the spectrum, too. These typically hear minor traffic matters, like failing to stop at a stop sign or petty theft. Wedged between the minor leagues of small claims and the Supreme Court's all-star game are a smorgasbord of courts and tribunals, each with their own exciting flavor of bureaucratic complexity. These deal with a variety of matters from bankruptcy, international trade disputes, to administrative appeals of decisions from different government sources, and family law disputes, to name just a few. Many of these courts and tribunals have different evidence systems, restrictions on what can be litigated or presented, and limitations on what the court can order as compensation or compel the losing party to do. There is no universal system that every court follows. The point here is that AI may have a role to play in streamlining, enhancing, or even replacing some of these courts and tribunals. Our current justice system is far from perfect, and is often not good at dispensing true justice. The biggest challenge has been one of funding. As population growth has taken off and more people have become empowered to take legal action, the courts have been put under increasing pressure. Cases often experience years of delay before courts reach a final determination. When one of my friends took over as judge of our local municipal court about a decade back, she had a backlog of almost 9,000 cases to handle. As the old saying goes, justice delayed is justice denied. Courts are mostly publicly funded and are not cheap to run. They aren't in the public eye much and are an easy target by politicians and bureaucrats to help balance their overburdened budgets. Courts are like the middle children of government spending, often overlooked and perpetually short on allowance. Though like every other department, they also had their fair share of waste and abuse, which AI has shown great promise at helping identify and reduce. Such underfunding threatens the ability of courts to provide effective access to justice, not only for protecting constitutional rights, but day-to-day resolution of criminal and civil matters too. To address delays and caseload burdens on courts, stopgap tribunals and systems are created. While these often have limited success in reducing caseloads on the courts, they typically have a dark side. They offer limited damage awards, restrict or largely eliminate the evidence permitted, and often do not get to the core of the case. The stopgap tribunals and systems seldom provide true justice as a result, akin to putting a band-aid on a broken leg and calling it first aid. They prevent people from truly getting their day in court. Most of these supposedly temporary stopgap tribunals and systems all too often become permanent fixtures in our justice systems. On the criminal side, plea bargains play an ever-increasing role in relieving pressure on the courts. Judges, prosecutors, and bureaucrats are happy because they don't need to go through or fund a case. And a defendant mostly loses their appeal rights after agreeing to the plea bargain, eliminating even more potential litigation and court time and costs. Failure to take a plea bargain can exact a high price to a defendant. Because if the court finds them guilty, the defendant faces a system heavily geared to penalize them for having put the courts to the effort of holding a trial. Plea bargains are like mystery boxes. Sometimes you get a slap on the wrist, other times it's a one-way ticket to the big house. There are many instances of defendants being railroaded by highly unfavorable plea bargains, even when they are innocent. Victims of crimes also dislike plea bargains because they don't get their chance to have their day in court, and they often correctly believe that the penalty defendants receive in a plea bargain is insufficient for the crime they committed. Even in civil courts, there are increasing moves to eliminate a lot of the caseload by encouraging, and sometimes insisting, that litigants restrict down their claims, and on parties undergoing alternative dispute resolution processes such as mediation. While that can sometimes be beneficial, it often results in extra time, money, and effort being spent by the litigants just to get their case before a judge. It can also be trauma-inducing if a victim has to confront and retell their story in dispute resolution and then later again in court. Back in the day, evidence gathering was the equivalent of a treasure hunt, except instead of gold doubloons, you would hope to find that crucial misplaced comma that could turn the case in your favor. It was an extensive process of combing through every single document that the litigants had, unlimited depositions, where you take oral evidence, lots of inter-party communications and mini-disputes within that main court case. In contrast, these days, judges may often restrict the number of depositions and interrogatories or the length of depositions, and increasingly use that power to cut down the amount of evidence that is gathered and presented in the main hearing. While it often simplifies the court case, it runs the genuine risk of eliminating evidence and issues that could actually correctly swing the decision in favor of one litigant. So in short, there are considerable issues with our current justice system, more than I've mentioned thus far, and of course many are subjective. Everyone's mileage varies. It is therefore important, when considering AI as a possible addition to or replacement of a court, that we cannot judge AI against an ideal and perfect justice system, because that's not the real justice system. The real question comes down to whether AI can improve the current justice system. The big thing early sci-fi and its tropes tend to get wrong about artificial intelligence and machines is that the only thing they all have in common is that they are designed with a purpose in mind. A calculator's job is to add numbers, and a drill's job to put holes in material, and both can do that better than you or I because we designed them to do that. They are purpose-built and have been improved on with time, as would be any other machine we might make. I do not know if humans have a general purpose, or what that purpose is, but it isn't adding numbers, drilling holes, vacuuming floors, manufacturing widgets, going through case law, or rendering judgments. Primarily because we tend to believe that humans have the right and obligation to find out and choose their purpose, and not too many of us like memorizing laws, though some of us do enjoy it. Therefore, we should, in theory at least, be able to make machines able to do routine tasks better than we can. Though in the case of automated justice, it depends so much on what we mean by judgment and justice and even mercy. We'll come back to that last one a little later. Before that, though, let's consider AI in the law and the roles it can play. AI is already being employed practically in the law. For example, AIs are being used to sort through mountains of data to identify information relevant for discovery in a case. This has eliminated the time-consuming and expensive use of junior lawyers, paralegals, and clerks to manually undertake this task. Some lawyers might mourn the loss of tedious paperwork to the unfeeling claws of AI. Most, though, are probably happy that it is gone, as it's not something that clients particularly understood the importance of anyway, and it often ends up yielding nothing for finding a smoking gun in the mountains of paperwork. AI is also being used to generate legal opinions and court filings. Often these are of good quality, but sometimes they are not. For example, a New York-based lawyer was recently fined after he misused ChatGPT, relying on it for research for a personal injury case. He ended up submitting fake citations in a court filing because he didn't double-check the output it produced. It is important to realize, though, that we are at the outset of the AI revolution, and the quality of output is constantly improving. There will come a time when the AI will get the information correct, or at least as correct as a human lawyer would. AI has made good inroads into streamlining what lawyers spend their days doing, removing or at least minimizing the drudgery of the legal practice. This increasingly allows lawyers to offer better value for money to their clients. However, we're not here today to talk about lawyers and their use of AI in their legal practices, but the justice system itself. So what roles could AI play in the justice system? To understand this, we need to delve into what the current roles are in a court, and we'll limit discussion to a civil court case for the moment. The court's roles can be loosely categorized as minion, functionary, gatekeeper, expert, hearing, and auditor. I have given these roles quirky names that are not the actual names of the positions in the various courts because they vary from court to court and jurisdiction to jurisdiction, and sometimes a role might combine two of them or spread it among other roles. Let's explore each of these in turn. The minion role, not to be confused with those yellow creatures many kids adore, and many adults too, involves the thrilling task of ensuring that your lawsuit is not filed under L for lost cause. Administrative staff mostly currently handle this in the courts. When a person files a document at court, it needs to be categorized, prioritized, and filed appropriately. Even automated non-AI systems can do this type of checking. Current AIs are more than capable of effectively filling this role. The functionary role is a step up from minion. This involves deciding on the validity of a document. For example, if a lawyer files a case in the wrong court, or they file documents late, or the documents filed are lacking in attachment or mandatory information, some non-AI automated systems can detect and reject such filings, especially with a little human oversight mixed in. However, an AI would be more appropriate for performing most of this role, because it involves some basic understanding of the language and the particular laws that apply. Again, current AIs could be easily trained to do these tasks. As with most things, we do not replace all human oversight or review, just limit it to making sure all is working and improvements can be understood and made and errors detected. A lot of times our concern will be avoiding a black box people don't understand or have forgotten how it works, and thankfully tasks like this are fairly transparent and simple to understand, thus good candidates for heavy AI use. We now move on to the first role that needs to be carried out by a judge or someone like a judge. The gatekeeper is like the bouncer of the legal club, deciding who gets in and who's left arguing with the velvet rope. It's basically shaping the case, making sure that irrelevant evidence is kept out, and nuisances to the court and the litigants is minimized by preventing litigants from going down unnecessary rabbit holes and eliminating issues that aren't strictly necessary. In recent years, case management has become the norm, basically getting the court involved early to dispose of issues and control the case so it doesn't grow out of proportion. The gatekeeper role ensures that case proceeds smoothly to trial and often encourages parties to settle through mediation or other processes to avoid the need for a hearing in court, which again has its pros and cons. Gatekeepers not only shape the case, but also maintain its focus by keeping out any irrelevant evidence that might confuse or distract from the main issues, which is at risk of being subjective, of course. In addition, gatekeepers can help streamline the process by eliminating any issues that are not essential to the main issues in the case. This can ensure a more efficient legal procedure and reduces the potential for undue delays or complications. Over time, gatekeepers have become more important, mainly because they help ease some of the responsibilities and workload from the hearing role. Much attention has been given to the gatekeeper role recently because it cuts down on costs. Cases and issues heard during the hearing role are considerably more expensive in time and funding. By shifting some of the burden to the gatekeeper role, the theory is that the entire system can operate more smoothly and efficiently. And again, we're focused on civil, not criminal cases at the moment, but arraignments and grand juries fill a similar space. However, as mentioned earlier, the gatekeeper role also has a dark side in that limiting the evidence or issues that reach the hearing stage can prevent litigants from achieving true justice. One significant disadvantage is the power the role holds over redirecting a case or restricting the court's consideration of specific aspects of the case. This power can hinder the pursuit of truth and fairness if misused or applied too rigidly. That's not necessarily the fault of the gatekeeper. Often it's the funding pressures and legislation put in place to govern the case. Limiting the case is often what bureaucrats want to achieve to minimize costs and time spent dragging the case through the court system, holding up other cases in the queue, which delays them getting their own justice in a timely fashion. Let's tackle the expert role. Experts in court are like guest lecturers, except the students are judge and jury, and the final exam could involve handcuffs. They help to educate the decision makers, be they the judge or a jury, in how to interpret the technical evidence in a case. Experts don't have first-hand knowledge of the events that happened, but they can help piece together parts of what happened looking at what remains after the event. So an expert could testify whether a bullet was shot from a particular gun from the markings on the bullet. You might be surprised that I added in the expert role as a court function. Often experts can be partisan, favoring the person who paid them. However, in many legal systems, experts have to swear to be impartial and are considered to be impartial by the court. In some jurisdictions, experts can be appointed to sit alongside a judge in cases involving complex technical issues and can rule on technical aspects of the case, overruling the judge on those technical issues. Much recent research has made AI systems into experts. AI are like the know-it-alls of data analysis, except they might actually know it all. AIs excel at focusing on a particular field or issue and painstakingly analyzing mountains of data to spit out an opinion on what the data represents. It's pretty much what caused the genesis of AI. Even today, a lot of the expert evidence in cases revolves around an expert explaining that they plugged in the relevant data into an expert model and it concluded some result from that evidence. Judges and juries are easily swayed if the machine generates a match for fingerprint, DNA, or other biometric data. In fact, there has been a worrying trend for juries to exclude other expert and actual evidences in cases and focus almost solely on the expert evidence of the match the machine found. There is no doubt that AI will become experts in cases in the future. We are pretty much already there. Their role is simply expanding. We've arrived at the main course, the courtroom drama, the bread and butter of the legal TV shows, where the only thing missing is dramatic background music. The hearing role is actually divided into a number of different functions, all tied around running an efficient trial or hearing, including acting as a gatekeeper to control what evidence can be presented, how witnesses are handled by the lawyers, what the jury can and cannot be told, and keeping a record of the proceedings so that any appeals from the court's decision have the full court record available to the higher court. And, of course, there's also that little function of deciding who won and who lost. The hearing role is conducted by a variety of actual people. They are court reporters that can provide the record of who said what in the trial, the judge deciding on the gatekeeping issues of what can be presented or not, and the judge or jury making the final decision, to name just a few. Ultimately, litigants often apply for a review or appeal of a decision. This brings us to the auditor role. This is where another higher court gets to consider the gatekeepers and substantive decisions made by other roles in the process for correctness. Litigants typically use this to change the outcome of the case or to improve their position, for example by reducing or increasing the damages, or in criminal cases to get the guilty verdict tossed out or get a new trial. A separate auditing function is a monitoring one, where the auditor keeps track of decisions that have been made and whether these are appealed. This can identify a variety of factors, such as cost overruns and anomalies in the decision, such as differences between how various courts perform against one another. Is one court consistently punishing or rewarding a given behavior or type of person more or less than others? Let's turn our focus now to how AI can be used to satisfy those other roles, or at least augment them. And again, as we discussed in our episode Human-Machine Teaming, often we see superior results from using a human with an AI over what either would produce. There are several ways in which the AI can improve upon the current minion role. One way is through natural language processing, NLP. NLP allows machines to understand human language and process it just like humans do. This means they can accurately categorize and prioritize documents based on their content, rather than relying on preset rules or templates. Additionally, AI can learn from past cases and decisions made by judges, which can help AI make more accurate classifications in the future. Another way that AI can improve upon the minion role is through machine learning algorithms. These algorithms permit it to learn from experience and improve its performance over time. By analyzing large amounts of data, it can identify patterns and trends that may not be immediately apparent to us. This can lead to more accurate classification of documents and faster processing times. So AI can augment the minion role by providing real-time updates on case progress and summaries of where a case is at. By tracking the status of each document and automatically updating case files, AI can help litigants, lawyers, court officials, and judges stay informed about the status of a case at all times. This can reduce delays and ensure that cases move through the court system more quickly and efficiently. This can also help the government and public help oversee and monitor performance. Let's now move on to the functionary role. You will recall this involves making decisions on the validity of a document or other evidence presented during a case. Currently, this is often done by human judges or clerks who review the documents and determine whether they meet certain criteria before allowing them into evidence. However, AI can be used to automate many of these tasks, such as identifying relevant keywords or phrases in documents or determining its authenticity based on digital fingerprints and corroborating evidence it has access to. One way that AI could augment this role is by providing real-time feedback to lawyers or litigants and judges pre-hearing. For example, an AI system could analyze the arguments presented by each side and provide immediate suggestions for relevant law or other supporting or contradictory evidence. This would help streamline the process of keeping the case relevant and stopping litigants from going down a rabbit hole that has a poor chance of success. Another way that AI could be used in this role is through predictive analytics. By analyzing large amounts of data from past cases, an AI system could identify patterns or trends that might influence future outcomes. This would allow the functionary officer to make more informed decisions about how to proceed with a case based on the past likelihood of success, given the case's particular set of facts and body of evidence. Overall, there are many ways in which AI can be used to improve the functionary role in courts, leading to faster, more efficient, and accurate decision-making processes. At some point, it could even take over the role entirely, acting less as a tool and more as a decision-maker and assistant to the courts and the litigants. Though again, never without some monitoring and oversight by us. This isn't a sci-fi movie, and we are presumably not so stupid as to leave no checks or oversight in place. So let's focus now on how AI could be used to augment or replace the substantive role in a substantive court trial or hearing. First, AI could assist with gatekeeping functions by automatically identifying relevant evidence and flagging potential issues such as admissibility of evidence, hearsay, or privilege. A lot of time in hearings and trials is often spent dealing with these types of objections. While a judge usually easily addresses these, having the AI there to act as a prompt and guide could be beneficial to speed up the proceedings. This would also free up time for judges to focus on more complex issues that require their expertise. Additionally, an AI can assist the court in considering the weight that the evidence should be given. There is often low-quality evidence that needs to be weighed up against other evidence. The AI could easily address the nature of the evidence and its weight. This could prove useful to the judge or jury to consider the importance of a particular piece of evidence or testimony. Second, AI could be used to provide real-time translation and transcription services during hearings and trials, which would help to ensure that all parties are able to communicate effectively and understand each other's arguments and have an instant, objective record of the proceedings. I should also add that these days, AI is so good it can even understand me and my lingering speech impediment most of the time, though for me at least, it is still faster to type scripts. And an actual recording could always be used in cases where that Dan autocorrect has struck again and changed what the duck someone said. Third, AI could also assist with legal research by providing judges and the parties with instant access to the relevant case law and legislation, saving them time and ensuring they have the most up-to-date information available. No chance of bringing in a piece of law that is a game-changer to the case, only to find out the legislature changed it 10 years ago. Finally, we get to the auditor role. One way that AI could assist with this role would be through the use of AI to analyze transcripts and identify any discrepancies or inconsistencies in testimony or evidence presented during a trial. Additionally, AI could also help to detect any potential conflicts of interest among judges involved in a case by analyzing their previous decisions and rulings. So too, AI could assist with cost auditing by identifying areas where costs could be reduced without compromising the quality of justice being delivered. This can even be in non-obvious ways, like letting an AI digitally mask a person's face and voice to avoid perceived bias issues. Or if we decide to go more remote for juries, allow jurors to watch testimony of the case at home, and with the AI carefully and automatically removing bits the judge has ruled to be stricken from the record. Or potentially digitally alter every name, or even face, in the case, to prevent the need for them to be sequestered or fears of bias. This has its own pros and cons too, but the goal of technology is to give us more options, so we can decide which to use, and when and how to use them. Whether or not we learn to trust the judgment or wisdom of AIs, neither is a cause to abandon our own personal pursuit of those faculties ourselves. So, AI has the potential to augment and take over the various roles in courts much more effectively than current administrative workers or non-AI automated systems. Through NLP, machine learning algorithms, and real-time updates, AI can accurately classify documents, learn from past cases, and provide timely information to various people involved in the case. Let's move away from the theoretical and look at how this might operate in practice. We'll introduce two litigants. No mortals, no intense trauma, just a simple, mundane sort of case. Joan approached her neighbor, Charles, asking he cut down a tree that was looking sick that was located half on Joan's property and half on Charles. Joan thought it might fall over. Charles, with the nonchalance of someone deciding on a Netflix show, said he'd mull over the all-boil dilemma. Fast forward a couple of months, and Mother Nature delivered her own verdict on the tree debate with the subtlety of Thor's meteorological hammer through Joan's roof. Joan wants to sue Charles for $20,000 in damages that she suffered in having to repair her roof and cart away the fallen tree. Joan, ever the digital citizen, logs on to the latest in the bureaucratic web interfaces at her local court to file her grievance against Gravity and Charles. As the matter deals a low amount of damage, she is entitled to sue using the new robo-justice system they've just introduced. She has an online consultation with the AI that asks her a series of questions about what happened. Joan says that Charles promised to pay her for the damage the morning after the storm, but he now denies ever saying he would do that. The AI asks a series of other important questions to begin the court case and draws up the court documents for Joan. Joan agrees to proceed after checking them. The AI also records the interaction that can't be used during the case as evidence. The AI, the ultimate middleman, outsources the awkward job of delivering the bad news to Charles via a process server, who probably doesn't get enough credit for their shoot-the-messenger risk factor. Charles, feeling betrayed by both his neighbor and now his ex-tree, decides to give the AI a piece of his mind. Because if you can't rant at a machine, who can you rant at? He explains that there was nothing wrong with the tree, that Joan was just being a meddlesome and nosy neighbor. He also says that she's delusional because she is an alcoholic and often fall down drunk, often knocking on various neighbors' doors to clear up minor or imaginary issues. He never promised to pay for Joan's damages. Anyway, the amount Joan is claiming is ridiculous because the tree only dislodged a couple of tiles from her roof. The AI creates the relevant court documents to enter Charles' defense, which is automatically sent to Joan. Again, Charles' interaction is recorded and entered as evidence in the case. The AI, doubling as a case management guru, schedules a digital get-together to lay down the law and give Joan and Charles their homework. In the conference, the AI explains that some of the allegations will not be able to be pursued unless they are relevant to the case. In particular, Charles' allegations about Joan being often drunk is not likely to be relevant to the case. The AI asks Charles to elaborate on how that is relevant to the case. Charles says Joan came up with a story that the tree was sick when she banged on his door one night, swaying, slowing her words, and smelling of alcohol, and just thought she was being her usual crazy self. The AI explains that under the law, if the tree was objectively sick and in danger of falling down over, Joan's condition at the time of her warning is likely irrelevant. However, if Charles can prove the tree was healthy and Joan's assessment was impaired by her intoxication, it may be relevant to whether Charles ignoring her was less negligent. The AI schedules a hearing date and instructs both parties to gather any evidence that will substantiate their claims and submit them. It gives examples of the evidence that might be relevant, such as photographs, bills, and eyewitnesses. This being the future, there is a good chance one of them had house cameras or high-resolution photos taken somewhere near that tree and recently. And indeed, another AI might be very good at scanning their image archives, footage, or Facebook postings to find those. Central to the case is the health of the tree, so the AI shifts to expert witness mode and advises Joan and Charles to submit photographs of the tree before and after the event. It also asks pointed questions of both parties about the state of the tree to gather data about its health. Joan says the tree was removed on her instructions, but Charles says he saw the workers cutting up and stacking up some wood in her yard. He's worried that since she lied about having the wood, Joan might destroy the wood so it cannot be analyzed. Joan admits that she retained some of the tree as firewood, but says she just forgot. Most of the tree was removed. The AI, slipping into its robe of authority, decrees that Joan's woodpile is now off-limits and must remain undisturbed, and issues a court order, preventing Joan from destroying any of the wood in her woodpile and requiring her to grant access to a court-ordered expert to inspect the wood and take samples. It also initiates a specific request to an arborist selected from the list of arborists that have signed up to the court's program to inspect the wood and obtain samples. It also issues a court order requiring Joan to permit Charles to get estimates of the damage to Joan's roof. It requests 3 quotations from Charles and asks Joan to submit any other estimates that she obtained before deciding on the removal of the tree. Joan gets Terry, her brother, living across the street, to approach the AI to give evidence. The AI asks open-ended questions to start and then more pointed questions of Terry. He basically says that he knows that Charles has had it in for Joan for years, ever since she reported Charles to local authorities for illegally parking his trailer on the street. On the night of the tree's collapse, he heard a loud crash somewhere in the neighborhood, but didn't investigate it because it was stormy outside. He's certain Charles promised to pay Joan for the damage when they met the night the tree fell, but that Charles then refused out of spite. When pressed by the AI, he admits he didn't overhear the conversation between Charles and Joan that night the tree collapsed, and the other stuff about the trailer was what Joan told him after she reported Charles. The AI issues a ruling excluding Terry's evidence from the case, as it is hearsay, and the fact that there was a loud crash was not useful in the case, because he couldn't tell where it came from, and in any case, both parties already admitted that the tree collapsed during that night. Charles uploads photographs of the tree from a couple years before, showing it was healthy. Joan uploads photos of the tree on the ground after it collapsed. Her photographs are grainy, but there seems to be a dark mass in the middle of the tree trunk that she thinks shows it was rotten to the core. Charles submits photographs of the damage to Joan's roof. Joan also does that and submits the invoices from the tree felling company and the roof repair company. Joan submits 3 quotes for roof repair and 3 for the removal of the tree, as does Charles. The arborist submits the required photographs and laboratory report on the wood samples she collected. The AI contacts the arborist and asks some questions about the wood. The arborist says she was not able to get samples of the tree near its base because only the smaller branches were retained as firewood. Charles enlists Betty, the eagle-eyed sentinel of the subdivision, who is armed with encyclopedic knowledge on Joan's happy hour habits, to share her cocktail chronicles with the AI, and whatever other gossip comes to mind. The AI asks Betty open-ended questions about Joan. Betty paints a vivid picture of Joan as a drunk who regularly serenades her neighbors. The AI issues a subpoena for Betty to give evidence at the hearing. On the hearing date, the AI begins by establishing the facts, using its database to pull up relevant property laws, precedent cases, and local ordinances about shared tree ownership and responsibility. The AI cross-examines Betty, asking if she knew what was in Joan's glass that night. After all, it might be water or a soft drink. Betty says she often waters the plants near her fence, which is immediately next to Joan's porch, and could even make out the brand of bourbon she regularly saw Joan refilling her glass with. She also says she's seen Joan go through a whole fifth of bourbon in one sitting, one night, all on her own. Joan often knocked on Betty's door late at night to complain about the smell of the fertilizer she used on her flower beds. When she did this, she was often swaying and slowing her speech and smelled of bourbon. When the AI cross-examines Joan, she says that none of that is true and that Betty was just being spiteful because Joan once threw her lawn clippings over the fence onto Betty's flower bed. She denies ever being intoxicated. The AI asks Joan about the dates of the quotes for the tree removal. Two of the quotes were dated after the tree was already removed. Joan admits that she simply used the tree felling company she had used in the past and didn't get other quotes before getting the tree removed. The AI puts on its detective hat, figuratively of course, and grills Charles, gently reminding him that estimating is not an art form and lowballing is not a sport. Charles admits that he asked them to minimize costs and only quotes for items that were clearly needed. He concedes that as the repairs had already been completed when the contractors did the quotes, some items on Joan's bill were omitted. Like a professor outlining the syllabus for a course that no one signed up for voluntarily, the AI lays out the legal framework, ensuring everyone is on the same begrudgingly educational journey. The AI sets out the principles of justice such as fairness, precedent, and the balance of probabilities that apply. The AI explains that its expert opinion concerning the tree is that it had markers for a tree disease that would ultimately cause its destruction, but the laboratory tests were inconclusive as to whether the disease was sufficiently advanced to have caused its collapse. The photographs of Charles were too old to be of any value, and those from Joan were too grainy to tell anything worthwhile about the tree. Based on the meteorological data from the night of the storm, the usual resilience of the species of tree in those conditions, the tree faced a moderate chance that it would collapse during that storm, even if it was healthy. All things being equal, as the tree straddled both properties, both parties had to share the loss under the law. However, if the evidence had shown that Charles reasonably knew about the condition of the tree and did nothing, his contribution would be increased. The AI makes the finding that Joan is frequently intoxicated and prone to being a nuisance to her neighbors. It rejects Joan's protestations to the contrary, as it detected she was lying for her biometrics, as well as the evidence from Betty and Charles. Charles was therefore reasonable in ignoring her complaint the night she complained about the tree being dangerous. The AI also rejected the evidence relating to Charles' promise to pay Joan for the removal, as there was no corroborating evidence either way. The AI, tapping into its inner King Solomon, decides to split the tree baby down the middle, awarding Joan a judgment for half of the reasonable cost of the repairs and removal of the tree. In calculating the reasonable cost of the tree removal, the AI rejected applying the actual cost, as Joan had not obtained quotes before engaging her preferred contractor. Indeed, the lowest of Charles' quotes was used. For the roof repair, Joan's actual costs were reasonable and Charles' quotes were deficient because they did not include everything required to make the repair. Charles was ordered to pay 50% of the AI's calculated reasonable costs for the repair and removal. The AI, in its final act of bureaucratic kindness, reminds the parties that they can still seek solace in the arms of a human judge on appeal, assuming they still prefer flesh and blood over circuits and code. If appealed, the full record of the case and a detailed explanation of its decision-making process and the legal rationale behind its verdict will be sent to the appeals court, ensuring transparency and aiding in the appeal process. The AI diligently adds another notch to its digital belt, logging the case and contributing to a growing compendium of case law that can be used for training and refining AI judicial systems in the future. Again, this is not a sci-fi story, so no one is assuming the AI can't make mistakes or that improvement shouldn't be perpetual. Over time, this constant evolving database will help improve the accuracy and fairness of automated justice. So what can we draw from this example? First, the process can be less adversarial and more inquisitorial, meaning that the decision maker, the AI, is actively involved in the case and drives the case. In contrast, in a conventional U.S. courtroom, the process is adversarial, meaning the parties drive the case, decide what to present, and effectively each run the case. An inquisitorial system can provide faster access to justice, is cheaper, and can get to the heart of the case more quickly. On the plus side, the AI promises access to justice cheaper, quicker, and permits a more nuanced access to justice than many current human-directed courts and tribunals do. The downside is that it only works when the judge is unbiased. While the promise of AI in the justice system is considerable, we must also be aware of potential limitations and ethical implications. The reason is obvious. The AI, to borrow an old expression, acting as judge, jury, and executioner. Or more accurately, every role currently handled by lawyers, court staff, judges, and juries. We miss out on the checks and balances that multiple different people acting in those roles bring. If something is awry in the system, one or more of those people involved can become a whistleblower to highlight the problem. When there is an AI in sci-fi, there is only the AI, unless other robust systems are installed. We can keep other humans in the mix, and indeed other AI, who are not total copies of each other. If AI gets a biased education, it's like that one annoying friend who can't stop quoting dubious historical facts they read on the back of a cereal box. The bias can be derived from biased training data or flawed algorithms that perpetuate or amplify existing prejudices in the legal system. Transparency and explainability of AI decision-making processes are also crucial to maintain trust and allow for meaningful appeals processes. Additionally, the human element of understanding, empathy, mercy, and the ability to interpret the spirit of the law are nuanced aspects that challenge the capabilities of current AI technology. However, we should not assume that will always remain the case. Using an AI in the courtroom also raises questions about how it might be gamed. The obvious one is subverting the AI by hacking. Another more subtle one is finding unreasonable idiosyncrasies demonstrated by the AI and exploiting those. These are disproportionate reactions to stimuli demonstrated by the AI that a human judge would not be expected to demonstrate. That said, there are many judges famous for their unreasonable idiosyncrasies, such as overreactions to people picking their noses or letting a mobile phone ring in court. So the AI would be in company here, but its idiosyncrasies may be far more bizarre. And either way, we would like to improve the system, not shoot for the status quo. The AI does have one failing that could be a major problem, and that is that it is only as good as its training. Though again, that is an issue with humans too. If it is trained on data that leans a particular way, its outputs will reflect that training. Concepts of justice and mercy are not universally agreed on and shift with time and place. We do not even have time to touch on the differences between rehabilitative and retributive justice today, for instance, but you get very different results based on which you choose to work with. Depending on who you ask and the materials you feed the AI for it to learn from, you will get different results. You may not want some fringe element of your society doing that feeding, or alternatively, leave it entirely up to the academics or majority rule. It's really up to the developers of AI and society in general to ensure that they don't let those AI get subverted for nefarious political, economic, or ideological gains, or even well-intentioned but flawed ones. After all, we know where the road, paved with good intentions, can lead. Again, we see the importance of not allowing such systems to be big black boxes we just imbue with our trust and blind faith. But that does not mean we can't still use them. The biggest danger when it comes to AI in our justice system is that most people's attention span when it comes to the justice system, especially for non-dramatic cases, can be limited and fickle. If your oversight is limited to TikTok-style short vids, expect your justice system to rapidly collapse. If we fail to pay attention to the detail of the AI being produced, we stand a very good chance that this technology will be controlled by a powerful fringe group in society to further their own agenda. We need robust safeguards and ethical guidelines and a will to monitor compliance. Judges in our current legal system are human, and I want to briefly touch on that. I think people worry about AI making decisions, and not without cause, but while we should be wary of that, we should also embrace it when it's wise. And on a personal note, I'd like to see them in more decision roles in a more controlled environment. Making decisions, even mundane ones, is just about the most stressful and draining thing you can do in life, and it is way harder when we're talking about deciding something life-changing for others. I've been lucky in life to have some very good mentors, around a dozen, and most were scientists or soldiers, but two of them were judges. One passed away years ago, and the other will be retiring in a few years here, and both with a spinning image and character of what people think of when they think of judges. Very good men and very burdened by their jobs. Precedent and sentencing guidelines make that burden lighter, and I think an AI would too, one that's doing an emotionless analysis of the facts. And again, I tend to think of that as a tool a judge would use rather than a replacement for one, but one that might save them a lot of gray hairs and ulcers. Decision fatigue is as real for judges as is for all of us, but most of us are not making life and death decisions all day. Nor is this limited to judges. AI can advise on a lot of things and give appropriate assistance wherever possible, leaving humans to make decisions but letting AI take away some of that burden and fatigue. The hypothetical example I gave earlier is probably very close to being a reality, even using our current state of AI development, which is why we set it in the modern day rather than some fictional case on Mars or Alpha Centauri, like we often do for stories on this show. Though once we have AGI, Artificial General Intelligence, all bets are off, simply because it is, by definition, expected to be self-teaching, self-reflecting, self-improving, and constantly evolving itself at a level of intelligence that surpasses our own. While it may start out with our morality due to its initial training, an AGI would probably rapidly diverge from that and develop its own identity and morality. And that is a scary thought. Do we end up with a destructive Dune Butlerian Jihad thinking machine, or a more benevolent Banksian cultural mind? Now that's up for debate. But AGI and AI are not the same thing, and you can't use the latter without the former. Earlier I made the point that judges on the US Supreme Court are appointed, not voted in, and they keep those appointments for life. That's intended to help them keep above politics, not answerable to the political whims of the moment. But many think that's not how it has worked out. Many feel bias has crept in, and indeed it probably has always been in there. There is a parallel here with AGI. If we replace the Supreme Court with an AGI, it will go its own way, and as humans, we might not like the results. Will its biases be any worse than what we have now? I cannot honestly say, but I'm not all that keen to find out, either. Better the devil you know, so to speak. But to wrap things up, the integration of AI into the justice system represents a significant shift in how we approach legal disputes and the administration of justice. While it offers the potential to improve efficiency, reduce costs, and standardize outcomes, it is not without its challenges, even if those are probably not the kind we see with robo-judges in classic sci-fi. As we move forward, it is essential to proceed with caution, constantly evaluate the impact of these technologies, and ensure the pursuit of justice remains a fundamentally human endeavor, informed and aided by technology, but not ruled by it. As with many things in life, the best way forward is one of balance and nuance. I should also say that those who abandon justice simply out of laziness probably should not expect it or much sympathy when they don't get it. Resisting the urge to hand the gavel to an AGI comes from the same place as not letting your smartphone choose your dinner. It might be smart, but it doesn't have taste buds. While I believe that we should resist completely handing over power to an AGI, as will inherently not be human and not bound by our own standards and morality, I think there is a much stronger case that AI can help us better deliver justice in the future. But you be the judge. Before we get on to schedule and announcements, I want to thank the crew over here at SFIA for all the help on episodes over the years, and two of our regular editors who helped contribute to the script, for instance, Mark and Constantine, are both lawyers and were pivotal to helping make this script come together. One of the things I love about this show is all the awesome and knowledgeable people I get to work with, and we're always looking for more folks to help if you're interested. Another thing I love about this show is how one day we can be out in the depths of interstellar space, a million miles or a million years from now, and next we can be right back in the present with technological problems facing us here and now, like we did today. Every topic we do on the show is serious, but we try to have fun with them too, and that's particularly true when we look at things like alien biology, as we did last year with our episodes on ammonia-based life and silicon-based life, and we're continuing that conversation this month in our Nebula exclusive on aliens based on crystals, in which we look at where and how crystals might serve as a building block for life, and look at five different hypothetical planets where it emerged using different evolutionary paths and mechanics. And again, Crystal Aliens is out now exclusively on Nebula, our streaming service, where you can also see every regular episode of SFIA a few days early and ad-free, as well as our other bonus content, including extended editions of mini-episodes and more Nebula exclusives, like last month's episode Topopolis, the Eternal River, January's Giant Space Monsters, December's episode The Fermi Paradox, Hermit Shoplifter Hypothesis, Ultra-Relativistic Spaceships, Dark Stars, The Beginning of Time, Life as an Asteroid Miner, Nomadic Miners on the Moon, Space Freighters, Retro Causality, Orc OR and Free Will, and more. Nebula has tons of great content from an ever-growing community of creators. Using my link and discount, it's available now for just over $2.50 a month, less than the price of the drink or snack you might have been enjoying during the episode. When you sign up by link, go.nebula.tv/IsaacArthur and use my code IsaacArthur, you not only get access to all the great stuff Nebula offers, like Crystal Aliens, you'll also be directly supporting this show. Again, to see SFIA early, ad-free, and with all the exclusive bonus content, go to go.nebula.tv/IsaacArthur. So this episode comes out on St. Patrick's Day, which managed to work itself into the script, as you probably noticed. And I hope everyone is having a fun and safe holiday. And thanks again to Mark for helping write up that case we discussed with the falling tree and making sure it was legally sound. This is also the halfway point for the month, and we still have plenty of episodes coming. This Thursday, we'll return to the Fermi Paradox on March 24th to discuss the evolutionary jump from simple to complex, and if that might be the solution to the big question of where all the alien life is. Then we'll finish our discussion of last month on black holes by deep diving Kugelblitz black holes and using them for power generation, before finishing out the month with a bonus Sci-Fi Sunday episode on the 31st, Multi-Planetary Empires. If you'd like to get alerts when those and other episodes come out, make sure to hit the like, subscribe, and notification buttons. You can also help support the show on Patreon. And if you'd like to donate or help in other ways, you can see those options by visiting our website, IsaacArthur.net. You can also catch all of SFIA's episodes early and ad-free on our streaming service Nebula, along with hours of bonus content like Crystal Aliens at go.nebula.tv/IsaacArthur. As always, thanks for watching and have a great week.